And welcome in at long last, another edition of the B-Squared Podcast, Major League Baseball Pandemic Edition. Alongside Brian Beto, I'm Jordan Bernfield, and today, as we record, it is July 22nd, 2020, and incredibly into July, the Cubs are undefeated because those two losses to the White Sox were exhibitions, so they remain undefeated in July for the first time in Cubs franchise history, Beto. So this is me trying to put a positive spin on what's been a terrible year.
Wow, that's, man, you know things are different here in 2020 if you're the one putting a positive spin on it. I'm just kidding, but I can't wait. I can't believe it's finally here. I didn't know if it ever would. We did a podcast, a month or so ago. Talked a lot of Last Dance with Michael Jordan, labor negotiations with baseball, see if this day would ever come, and you know, here we are. So we'll see if they'll finish the season and how long they go. I'm trying to be positive like you and see if they can find a way to make it through the regular season and the postseason. But we'll have to see. But I'm excited just to have something on for 3 hours every day.
I am too. I will say, I'm wondering what you think, because when I watched the first game on Sunday night and then I watched the game Monday night, it was weird to watch it, and it was weird to experience it, if that makes sense. Like, the first thing you think is, wow, this is great. We're playing baseball. But I kept thinking that when baseball returned, it would signify that we were back into a state of normalcy, or at least something close to that, and we're nowhere close to that. And to look at Wrigley Field with, like, a tent up in the section right behind the Cubs dugout and nobody in the seats, and then to see the same thing at Guaranteed Rate, and you know, we can make the jokes, haha, no one's there, but like, it's weird to see ballparks, no matter where, that have nobody in them, to hear fake crowd noise, to see coaches and players wearing masks on the field, which, great, I'm glad they're doing it. I'm just saying, the whole visual of it, it's like, the people that are saying, oh, this is a sense of normalcy because baseball is back, I would say kind of, but kind of not. What was your thought?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think those pipe dreams of having just like a cut and dry, like, we're back, those were dashed a couple of months ago, at least, knowing this is going to go on for much longer. And it still has a long way to go. But when the first pitch came from Kyle Hendricks on Sunday night, it just felt like, gosh, like competitive team sports on my television for the first time since early March. So last time I watched a competitive sporting event that I was invested in, I was at the Missouri Valley Conference Championship game on March 8th when Bradley beat Valparaiso. And I was a very, very happy man then. And I'm a happy man watching on Sunday night, despite the results. And it's weird with no fans and all that stuff, but I'm just happy to have something back. And it's been fun. It's fun to be angry again. I even texted my dad. I was like, how excited are you for Christian Yelich to homer off Craig Kimbrell on the Friday night, in the ninth inning on Friday night? And I'm like, all right. It feels good to actually want that to happen.
Well, you know,
not really.
To your point,
I say that now.
Yeah, right. But to your point, it feels good to invest in something that doesn't matter, right? Like, one
correct
thing that I've learned, probably, and I think that I always had some notion of this, but I think that the pandemic has completely sealed that my sports fandom and the things that I do in my career as a sports caster, like, have so little meaning. Like, I realize that they provide a service to people, that it's a distraction
right
in life and all that stuff. And I realize that that's good. And I'm not trying to completely put it down, but I'm just saying, like, the things that I used to get upset about, like Craig Kimbrell giving up a home run, like, that means nothing now. However, I would still like to get annoyed about something bad that happens in a Cubs game. And if there's any indication
right
based on the last two games that the Cubs played, and I'm not going to be the guy that overreacts to the two games they played, but if that's any indication for what kind of season it's going to be, we're going to be plenty mad for 2 months because they stunk up the joint for those two games against the White Sox. And I realize that they're exhibitions and the whole thing is weird and they're all adjusting and maybe it means absolutely nothing and it probably means absolutely nothing. But if it is an omen, then it portends that the Cubs are going to stink, which would just add on to the upset of 2020 if they finally come back and they're terrible, right?
I agree. And, like, it is funny, though, because I feel like there was so much stock placed in those two games that if they happened in March, nobody would even know what happened. Nobody would know Eloy Jimenez hit a grand slam or at least remembered it more than, like, 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just hilarious to see the overreactions on both sides. And I get it because you're at the point now where you just want something. You want to cling to anything. And there's been nothing to overreact to for 4.5 months. So we'll see what happens. But I know they're playing when we record this right before their third exhibition game. But I put zero stock into the outcomes of those.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't matter. The one thing that I would say, let's start with the blanket statement that I know we both agree on, which is that let's hope that they can play this season safely. Let's hope that there aren't any spikes in COVID cases among players and staff and anyone connected to the sport, just as we hope that the case numbers will come down and people will be healthy and we can beat this pandemic. But after we make that blanket statement, one of the things that I'm really interested in seeing is there's so many things about baseball that we're used to saying, like it's a marathon, not a sprint. And you have to, and we're always looking at kind of how a team will deploy its resources over the course of a 6 month slog. And that's one of the kind of beauties of baseball. If you like baseball, is that it is something where it's uniquely long and the sample size always weeds out who the best teams actually are. None of this stuff matters in a 60-game schedule. Like, it's very possible that a bad team gets off to a great start and wins the division. It's also very possible that a really good team has either COVID cases that derail their season or baseball weirdness where they just stink for no reason. So it's also possible that, like, the Cubs could be great or awful, and it may not be indicative of anything for the future of the franchise. But because it's a 60-game season, it feels like all caution is thrown to the wind. Like, all the things that we think about in terms of strategy on a day-to-day basis, basically, with how short this season is, I feel like these managers are going to have to play this pedal to the metal. Like, there's no saving anybody. They haven't played in 4 months. And if you lose five in a row in a 60-game season, that is catastrophic. Whereas in the regular season, that's 162 games, that's normal. So I feel like from purely a baseball perspective, Brian, what I'm most excited about watching, other than the fact that it's on my television and I don't have to watch sad news stories 24 hours a day, is that this is a kind of baseball we've never seen before.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you're right, because I think this year more than ever, you want to have a ton of depth in every part of your club, really in any sport, because you want to be luck independent, meaning you don't want to have to rely on luck to do well. So if things go poorly, COVID spikes upon your team, or there's an injury, the more depth you have, the more luck becomes a non-factor. So that's one aspect of it, which is interesting. And secondly, to your point, like in these small samples, I'm curious, like, when you boil it down to the Cubs, like, if you're David Ross, and I'll do an example, and Jason Kipnis goes 0 for – he's struggled the last couple of years. He's regressed, right?
Yeah.
Let's say he goes 0 for 15 to start the year. At what point are they like, all right, let's just go to Horner and Bodie and forget about it? Or do they let him ride it out? Because in a normal season, you might say, like, this is a guy that even though he's regressed the last few seasons, he's a professional hitter, he'll work out his kinks. But you don't have the luxury of doing that.
No, you don't.
And that's a big thing. So I'm curious, let's say Craig Kimbrell gets lit up in the first week and a half of the season. Do they go to Jeremy Jeffress?
Right.
So, like, how quickly do you make those hooks?
Wait, I have to like him now. I'm intrigued to see. I have to like Jeremy Jeffress now, right? This is weird.
You have to.
I guess, I mean, he seemed likable, frankly, as a Brewer, but he was a Brewer.
Right.
So I didn't like him. But now I think I could embrace him because he seemed super likable then, but it was like my contractual obligation to dislike him as a Brewer. But now that he's on the Cubs, this will be interesting. But I agree with you. And then the one thing I will say is, and again, I'm not overreacting to the way they played, beyond the fact that Craig Kimbrell shaved his beard and I don't even recognize him anymore.
It was really weird. So weird.
It literally threw me off. I was like, he came out on the mound and I was like, you know, I'd walked away from the TV for a moment to get something to eat. And I come back and sit down and I'm like, who the hell is that? And then I was like, oh, wait, that's Craig Kimbrell. It literally took me 10 seconds to figure out.
Yeah, until he did the arm thing. Yes. And you're like, okay.
Yes, but then after identifying him.
Like, who is that, Bob Scanlon?
Well.
Is that Paul Aschenbacher out there?
I mean, if it's Paul Aschenbacher, that would be incredible. However, Amore Telemaco. But I would say that, like, he has to not stink. And because if he's bad this year, obviously they can't control the fact that all this happened this year and the season is short. But they signed him to 3 years. And if they go into the final year of his deal and he's basically dead weight, that would really hurt in 21, assuming that there is a normal season in 2021, which at this point might be a lot to assume. But let's just assume that there is a normal season in 2021 and you're paying Craig Kimbrell all that money and he's giving you nothing basically over the course of his first 2 years. So I think this 60-game stretch, if he stays healthy, is really important to their future, at least for the next couple of years. Granted, they have a lot of things to think about with some of their players becoming free agents and the types of contracts that they might get. But Craig Kimbrell is a guy I'm going to be watching very closely over this 60-game schedule because I have no idea what to expect from him.
I think the closer spot is more important than it is generally in a typical year because we talk about one-run games and there's some randomness in win-loss records with that. But now it's so important to be so detail-oriented. Those one-run games are so important. And if your ninth inning guy is struggling, even in a small sample, that really hurts. And you look at the Cubs and the weakness, at least for this team for me, is the depth in their starting rotation. So if they're not getting these seven-inning performances, even halfway through this season, once the arm strength's built up and things like that, like they're gonna struggle to hold teams to low run totals. And then you bookend that with a guy struggling in the ninth inning, and they might struggle. So I agree. I know Steve Stone talked about it on the broadcast on Sunday night because we had to watch the Sox broadcast because I, of course, don't get Marquee yet.
Neither do I.
Right. And he brought it up about being the key to success. And I don't think it was being overblown. I don't think it's unfair to say if Kimbrell struggles, the Cubs might struggle. He's not a one-man show, but they need a step up from when they had last year. Is he going to be the guy that's the 208 lifetime ERA? Probably not. But they need to have some reliability towards the back end of the pen because I do think they have some good arms in middle and late relief outside of him, but they need to be sharp in that aspect of the game, at least in my opinion.
I am
if they want to compete.
Yeah, I feel this is how I would assess what they are. I think they're a solid, not great offensive team. I think that they are woefully inadequate in terms of pitching depth. That might not matter in a 60-game season the way it would in a 162-game season. Like if you told me they were going in to an 162-game season with this roster, I would tell you they are not making the playoffs for sure. However, in a 60-game season, they might make the playoffs because I have no idea what's going to happen, and they have as good a shot as
any team
in the
division.
So you
don't think they could make it in a regular – like if we had started in April, you don't think they would have made it?
No. I don't think that they have good enough pitching. Just when I look at the roster that they have, they need too many things to go right for them objectively for their pitching to be
good. But which
good.
Team doesn't in the Central?
No, I agree. I think the only reason why they might have had a shot is because the Central is flawed – and they're just as flawed as any other team in the Central. So you could argue that, yeah, sure, maybe they get hot and they make it. But you know, there are few bigger John Lester fans than me. But I think that what we're seeing, at least over these couple of weeks, is unless he's got an injury that I'm unaware of, or maybe you would know something better than me, the fact that he's the fourth starter makes me feel like they probably feel like this is sort of the end for John Lester. And I love John Lester. And I think they love John Lester. And they don't want to say that because he deserves that respect, right? But I think the fact that Tyler Chatwood is going to pitch before John Lester signals to me that they want to limit John Lester's starts. And the only reason to do that would be that you believe that he's coming to the end of the road. And there's nothing wrong with that. I want to be clear about this. Like, John Lester has been the best free agent the Cubs have ever signed. He has been incredible for most of his Cubs tenure. And he is an older pitcher, so it is totally natural. And they knew when they signed him that the sixth year of his deal was probably not going to net them much. However, when you objectively look at what he is now, it's not likely that he's going to be much. And the reason I bring that up is, Brian, look at their rotation. I mean, Kyle Hendricks, for the most part, has been great in his Cubs career, but he's really not a number one starter. Yu Darvish should be, but even though Yu Darvish was great down the stretch last year, and I am certainly as hopeful as anyone that the rest of his Cubs career, we see a lot more of what we saw at the end of 2019 than we did the first year and a half that he was a Cub. If we're fair about it, we really don't know if Yu Darvish is going to be great or not. We have no idea. Mm-hmm. Then after those two guys, you're talking about Jose Quintana, that has been the epitome of average as a Cub, John Lester, who's at the end, and they don't have a fifth starter. I mean, I know Alec Mills is going to be that, at least for this 60-game season, but we all know that that's really not the greatest option. So if we're just looking at it from what I think is a fairly objective look, they don't have enough pitching, and their bullpen, other than Kimbrel, who we hope is good, but we have no idea at this point, they don't have much. I mean, Rowan Wick was a nice story last year. Jeremy Jeffress is a nice addition, but they didn't spend the money because they claim not to have it. They just don't have very good pitching. They just don't. I just don't see it.
No, I agree. I think if you speak about the starters, I think the Lester thing, I think we all know at this point, people view him as more of like a competitive back end of the rotation, 4 or 5 starter. Hopefully he proves everyone wrong and he comes out in a shortened season. And
agreed.
And he was 2016 Lester, you know?
I love him. I'm just saying he's not that same John Lester.
I do think I'm curious why they put him fourth behind Chatwood outside of just like view him as the fourth. I'm curious if that's a matchup thing, if they like Chatwood's matchups against the Brewers and Lester against the Reds, because you do have to start to plan for that type of stuff more than you typically would.
That's true.
Like if this is April, they don't care about that probably.
Yeah.
But they might look at the way things line up and like those matchups better for Lester. Mills, Chatwood, Lester, probably fine options, but you have 3 potential fine options as innings eaters. The depth is what scares me. The lack of just quality, because you're right, because I like Hendricks and Darvish, and if you're going to put labels on those guys, you're probably a couple of 2 starters, and then you have 3, 4, or 5 starters.
Yeah.
So it's like you need to get length out of those, so that's why I think it's so important to have the bullpen step up. I think we talked about Kimbrel, talked about a little bit of Wick, Jeffress. I think the Cubs, since they couldn't spend that money, they played the volume game with the bullpen, signed a bunch of guys, which, you know, middle relievers, they're lightning in a bottle over a year or two, and then it's like, and it's a crapshoot. So they're hopefully like 2 or 3 of those guys pan out. Unfortunately, you don't have much time to figure that out because you only have 60 games. So a lot does have to go right, to your point. This is probably the most flawed Cubs roster they've had since 2014.
Yeah.
But like I said, you look at the rest of the Central outside of the Pirates, their whole roster is flawed. Every team's got some flaws. So the Cardinals offense is flawed, probably. the Brewers pitching, especially starters, is flawed. Hader's arm's starting to fall off potentially at freezing cold takes. You could see that there because we'll see that happen.
Yeah.
And the Reds, you never know what they've haven't had that winning DNA yet, if that's overblown or not. But we'll see.
Yeah,
but I agree with that. There's definitely question marks.
From an offensive standpoint, going into this season too, it doesn't feel – I mean, they could be a good offensive team, certainly. I think that having the designated hitter obviously benefits every National League team. I think it benefits the Cubs. I think it would have benefited them more when Joe Maddon was the manager because of the way that he mixes and matches. We don't know yet how David Ross will deploy lineups and whether – that kind of thing will still be something that the Cubs do or they don't. I mean, we only saw a few spring training games, so we really don't know kind of what his philosophy will be with regard to mixing and matching lineups on a day-in, day-out basis. My assumption is there will be less of that because I feel like they want Ross to be different than Maddon. So my guess is there will be more set lineups than there were when Joe was the manager of the team. But that being said, you know, everyone says Kyle Schwarber is your DH. And I don't know about that because I don't know if the Cubs have a lot of outfield depth. I have a feeling that Kyle Schwarber is going to play a lot of left field. I think that where they have more depth is in the middle infield. And so I could see more of a scenario where you use Horner and you use Kipnis and you play them both and you have Javi Baez at short, obviously, every day. I mean, we're obviously assuming health through this whole thing.
Yeah.
So if Baez is at short and both Horner and Kipnis hit, they will both play, I think. And you'll use one of them as the DH and one of them not. And the other thing that you could do is you could put Chris Bryant in left field for some games, put David Bote at third, you know what I mean? And then not play either Horner or Kipnis, depending on whichever one's hitting better or fielding better. So I guess the point is that there are creative things that the Cubs can do with their lineup, but I don't think any of these are such great options is my point. It's not like they have this abundance of great offensive talent where you got to get everybody into the lineup. I think that they can be a good offensive team. And you know that I'm not really a traditionalist with a lot of this stuff, but I have to say, I don't know that the Cubs can afford this Chris Bryant as the leadoff man experiment because I get that they don't have a leadoff man, but I don't think that they have so many run producers in the middle of their lineup that they can just have Chris Bryant not be one in the middle of the lineup. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that they have that ability.
No, that's fair. And I guess we'll see it. But I would add one other dimension of DH, depending because of the roster expansion potential, is having someone like Caratini be a designated hitter if he can hit like he did last year as well. So he might be another option because if you keep a third catcher, whether it's like a Lobatone or a Fegley.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's one area. I agree. I don't think Schwarber is going to be like the designated hitter like all the time. But I think that this lineup's going to mash, to be honest with you. I'm worried that they do have sort of that one-dimensional vibe, which has hurt them the last couple of years. You know, a lot of three outcomes, which are great, but not great in the situational sense per se. I know that's something they want to get better at. Someone like Horner might be able to help with that dynamic. But I think you look at the run producers, if Brian leaves off, resuming second, you still have Baez, a great middle-of-the-order hitter, run producer, power. Wilson Contreras, one of the best run producing catchers in the lineup.
Yes.
Kyle Schwarber's second half last year was absolutely incredible.
He was great. Yes, he was great.
So if those guys can, and Jason Hayward, when he's in the right role, not leading off, hitting against righties, is a solid hitter as well. Can contribute
yes.
to. So I agree with you that maybe it's not ideal, but they might, if those guys in the middle with Contreras specifically and Schwarber can continue we were last year, I think this lineup could really carry them and mask some of the pitching deficiencies that they might have.
All right. I mean, listen, I hope so. So then let me ask you this.
I hope so too.
Before we go, given the situation that we're in, this is literally the most unique baseball season we ever experience in our lives, given everything that's gone on this year with the pandemic and the uncertainty of even playing any of these games starting on Friday, what will you take from this season? Like, if they have a great year or a bad year or a middling year, how much do you feel like we can even conclude from a season like this?
No, that's a great question. I don't really don't think there's much you can. I don't know how much that can happen this year that will affect your decisions from this team moving forward. Contracts aside and what the budgets are going to be and all that stuff for guys coming up in free agency. But if somebody has a great year, I don't know how much stock you put into it from like a, how do you look at, evaluate this player for the future? I really don't know. I don't know how much you can. I think this is, I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah. I mean, like
they're just going to see what happens and take your best guess.
I think that some of the guys that are not opting out are looking at this kind of, well, I have to play because I need to increase my status for my next contract or whatever. And guys that have made big money often, or not often, but some at least have chosen that they're not going to play. I think with regard to the Cubs, I don't know that they have that. I think with regard to the players that are going to come up for contracts, I mean, Theo and Jed know, presumably, if they're going to want to choose to pay Chris Bryant or Javi Baez. I think they know the answer to that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think they know what whatever their answer is in terms of how much money they're going to have and what they're going to, who they're going to decide to invest in. Given the deal that Mookie Betts is allegedly signing today, I don't know how that affects the market for either Baez or Bryant, but it does seem to me that it was curious to see those numbers because I get that they're massive numbers and that these guys get these deals like this. But given the pandemic and given the losses that, and I, let me be very clear about this. I don't feel bad for any of these teams. I'm just saying like from an, from the standpoint of like having the money to pay $350 million to a baseball player, the money's going to have to come from somewhere. And I don't, the Cubs model, from everything that I understand, is heavily weighted on the fact that in a normal situation, they make so much money from attendance at the ballpark and the gate and the people being at all the bars and restaurants that the Ricketts family owns and the rooftops and the whole experience that they've created. So the fact that they have a net of zero basically for this year has to hurt them in some way. Like, I'm not saying that they should cry poor, and I don't want to hear it, frankly, from them. But what I am saying is, like, if we're looking at it in the context of them investing $300 million in a player, I'm not sure where that comes from, unless they have those resources built up, but they're saying that, like, we took, you know, they're going to make maybe 30% of the revenues that they would have expected to make. Is that going to be enough for them, given the investments that they're, that they've made in the ballpark and all the things surrounding it? And this network, like, are they going to have the money to go get a player? And in theory, you'd say yes, but in another sense, I don't know exactly what their books have. And so I don't know whether they're going to be able to spend the money on that. And when I saw that Mookie Betts signed that deal with the Dodgers, I thought, well, they must have unlimited money because they're able to spend it.
They are. And then you look at what they've done and – what puts the outside of all the gate, no attendance, what the Dodgers felt like they could do is invest in a player like that, because look at what else they have coming up and what they have cost control. They have Gavin Lux, which I don't know if he's going to turn out to be a superstar, but he's a top prospect in baseball. Walker Buehler, still have control over. Will Smith, the young catcher. They have no like real long-term commitment after like 2021 with Kershaw, and Price has got a couple of years, but they don't have a ton locked up. So they feel like they could spend the money on the guys that they know now, and they could probably win on the cheap with some of this young talent. The Cubs don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
The Cubs have uncertainty in those spots. So they have to pick and choose a little bit more wisely, and there's some more uncertainty on like how much budget, and because they're going to have to spend money to fill holes in other areas where they haven't had prospects come up and succeed recently, the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's getting better, yeah. But they're nowhere near the Dodgers.
That's a good point. Yeah. So that must be it. But, you know, I saw that today and I thought, God, like if they, and I'll ask you this before I let you go and we get ready to watch the season. If you had to guess right now, which player the Cubs are going to make the investment in between Baez or Bryant, assuming that they're not going to sign both, because I think it's a fair assumption that they're not going to sign both to big contracts, which one would you sign, and which one do you think they'll sign?
Oh, you're killing me with the wood. Which one? I don't know. I think that Baez is obviously just more likely. And I know nothing, you know, as much as anyone else, but just seems to be with what we've read and the speculation and him playing shortstop and feeling like the Cubs might have ways to replace Bryant more than they replace Baez. That seems to make a little bit more sense. And I don't know who I would choose between the two. I think it's an incredible debate. I think there's fair opinions on either side. So that's my cop-out answer.
Well, I'll give you mine. I think they're going to sign.
Good. We need some decisiveness.
Yes, I think they're going to sign Baez. Yeah. I would sign Bryant. And here's my reasoning.
Okay.
I love them both. I want them to keep them both. But if they're not going to keep them both, to me, Bryant is more the sure thing. If I'm investing huge money in a player, I feel like I could confidently say that over the next whatever number of years they sign him for, 7 years, I don't know, because who knows what kind of deal
whatever it's going to be.
I feel like I could pencil Chris Bryant in for a good year every year, right? Like, he may not be 2016 Chris Bryant again, although I think it's possible that he is that again, but he's going to be a really good, really versatile, count on him to be a high average, high on base, high slash line kind of guy, right? I think that you could take to the bank, and he can play several positions for you and play them well, whether it's the outfield or the infield. And I think he'll probably be able to do that for the next 5 to 7 years. I think Javi Baez might have the higher ceiling than Bryant, but I think he has the lower floor, meaning that Javi Baez is incredible and the instincts are amazing and all the things that he does are awesome. And I love Javi Baez, but I also think Javi Baez relies a lot on his athletic ability. And if he didn't have it 5 years from now, he's probably not even close to the same player, right? Like, I think Javi Baez, if he's not as quick as he is currently, isn't able to take the chances that he does on the bases or in the field or at the plate. So if I'm projecting 34-year-old Javi Baez versus 34-year-old Chris Bryant, I don't think 34-year-old Chris Bryant changes that much in terms of the player that he is, but I think 34-year-old Javi Baez is probably very different than current Javi Baez. That's the only reason why I think I would choose Bryant. But I want them to keep them both, and I love El Mago. I just, you know what I mean? I just think,
yeah, like, no, well,
if I'm making a long-term investment, see. I need to know what the guy's going to be, right? It's like Theo and Jed always say, you're paying for future performance. And I think that the future performance of Bryant is more likely to be consistent than the current performance of Baez might be the higher ceiling. But the future performance is Bryant.
Remember when the Cubs were going to trade Bryant for Nolan Arenado like 4 months ago, and it seems like 10 years ago?
Oh my God, that's a great point.
I totally forgot about that was in a thing.
It was.
I don't know if that was actually real, but that was a rumor for a little bit.
You know what? It's funny that you...
That seems so long ago.
Well, just lately I've been covering so much news at work and like so many just sad and just like draining stories. And it just, it makes me laugh to think that like 4 months ago, the thing that I cared about was whether the Cubs... We're going to trade Chris Bryant for Nolan Arenado. And I was actually one of the people that thought, if you're going to not keep him, then maybe you do that
right.
trade.
It makes sense.
Yes.
Right.
My God.
Oh man.
Yeah. Well, at least
60-0. Don't mean a thing without the ring.
Agreed. So
it's been so long, I can't even say this.
All right, so prediction time, and then we get out of here. Prediction time. Honest, what is your honest prediction for the Cubs?
Cubs over Sox in the World Series. But if you have a backup plan, I don't know. I do think that I don't know. Maybe I'm biased. Maybe I'm being
fanboy. Well, you are biased, but that's one of the things that I love about you.
But I do think that they do have the least flaw. I think that I would take them to win the division. If I had to take a pick, but I feel not confident at all because I could go one of four ways. And that division could be won with potentially with 33 wins.
Yeah.
33-27.
Yeah. I have them winning. I have the Cubs winning 34 games.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I have the Cubs winning 34 games because I think that 34-26 is doable. I mean, that's a solid team. That might win the division. It might not win the division.
You have to hammer the Pirate. You have to hammer the Pirates. You have to hammer the Tigers and hammer the Royals.
This is
like sweeps.
Yes, but this is why I'm picking them because I think
position.
Yeah. You said it.
That you can win.
Yes. The reason why I'm picking them to win 34 games, because I don't want people to think I'm a flip-flopper here. I don't think they're that good. But I think because of this geographical schedule, it's going to help them. I mean, they're getting a bunch of games with Detroit and Kansas City and teams that stink, which maybe in a 60-game schedule, they turn out to have like a fluky season. But objectively, when you look at those teams, they're pretty bad. So I think the schedule is going to help the Cubs a lot. Like if they were playing a normal schedule, I mean, think about it though. Like if you're the Texas Rangers, for instance, you've got to do more travel than any other team in the league in this weird schedule. And you're playing teams that are going to decidedly be harder than what the Cubs are playing. I mean, the Cubs get the benefit of these bottom feeder American League teams, which is really good for them. So
yeah.
I think that might get them to 34 wins, but who knows?
Yeah.
I just hope everyone stays healthy. I hope we're healthy.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to watching empty stadium baseball on Friday.
Me well, too. I can't.
I won't be able to watch it, but assuming that I could watch it, it would be great. So
it would be wonderful.
Yes. All right. Well, we're back. I don't know if we're better than ever, but we're definitely back and we will be back again. And we look forward to talking about something as trivial as baseball. And let's hope everybody stays healthy. So Beto has predicted 60-0 in a World Series win over the Sox. I'm picking 34 wins for the Cubs. I don't think I'm picking them to win the World Series, but if they do, that would be one nice thing in what's been a decidedly terrible 2020. So for Brian Beto, I'm Jordan Bernfield, and we will talk to you next time on the B-Squared Podcast. Go Cubs.